Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
Michael Kelly also joining us, producing and participating. It's the P and the P.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
We appreciate those of you joining us live as well as those listening to the archive. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. We have a number of educational programs, including IMHS metaphysicsinstitute.org, that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysical science and counseling and coaching and holistic healing and a bunch of other stuff. We also have Thomas Francis University at tfuniversity.org that offers standalone courses, and we have other educational programs as well. I'd like to read our abbreviated principles of belief. There are 9 of them. The first one is do no harm, do right. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings, consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And the expanded version of these 9 principles can be found at metaphysicalhumanism.org. So, tonight, see there's a few people in the chat room, and if you have a question, as always, please type it in the chat room there and we'll get to that. And then a little later on, we'll get to our inner oracle card readings as usual. And so tonight the topic basically has to do with right and wrong. Exactly what is it? And Michael came up with the topic, so we'll blame him for it. But the topic is, what does right and wrong mean? Initially, he was going to say, what is right and wrong? Well, you know, that opens up a whole nother can of worms. But Michael's going to start us off with a monologue. I don't know.
Well, I'll try to keep it to a short monologue, but really I was thinking about making the discussion set around the concepts of right and wrong, or the more dramatic and kind of flashy way to say it, good and evil. It's a discussion that human beings have had for a very, very long time. What is good? What is evil? What is right? What is wrong? And why are they? And I think that questions that don't have an obvious, easy answer are the most interesting to ask, the most fun to discuss. And this is something that we've talked a lot about as a society. Like I said before, it's been something that's been talked about for millennia. It's going to be debated for millennia to come. And we've even devoted entire Star Wars trilogies to the topic of good and evil.
Among other things.
But, the thing that I always try to get at when it comes to metaphysics is, what is the core of its purpose? What is the core of its of being in terms of where does it come from? Where does the idea of right and wrong spring from? Is always one of the most interesting questions to grapple with. And I'd like to really start the discussion there.
So, to be very specific, your discussion point is
my discussion point is, okay, so what does right and wrong mean? Why do we assign certain attributes as right and others as wrong? I mean, there's a lot to be said for certain aspects of cultural relativism, the idea that we have to judge the morality of something, the ethics of something, based on the context of the culture that it's in.
That's cultural relativism, yes. So that's why in cultural anthropology, they study cultures, right? So some cultures will accept certain things, like child marriages and other things like that. Different cultures have different things. And so cultural relativism basically means that those things are right within the context of that culture, as you said. Then there's human universals, where there's a number of things that are pretty much universal among all cultures, you know. And there's actually quite a list of them. We discussed this, by the way, in our school
M3.
Curriculum, M3, yeah, segment one, as a matter of fact.
And actually, just to prepare for that, I've been going over tonight myself, and a lot of good stuff there. And it's just such a important topic, especially in, you know, it's something that's been on a lot of minds lately. I mean, it always is. Every moment, every era feels like it's the most important one to the people that are going through it. But I'd say that the global atmosphere is calling for renewed discussions of what is right and what is wrong. We're seeing a lot of shifts in the national ethics, at least with the Me Too movements, with just a lot of social change, I think, for the positive. So, but again, I think it's a positive that we see more equality when it comes to homosexual and transgender rights, when it comes to marriage equality. And really, I feel that equality is a vital component of an ethical existence, of an ethical society. But that's not a universal view amongst all societies, amongst all people, even.
Well, let's get down to the let's first establish the bottom line. You know, what's right and what's wrong, and Fran had mentioned it already in the chat room. You know, do no harm. Do no harm, do right. You know, and that is cross culture. I mean, that do no harm, do right. Now, that's the bottom line of any morality. You know, I mean, we're talking about a moral compass here, and the cool thing is that most people, you know, have a moral compass. In other words, we have conscience, and our conscience basically drives, you know, the morality part of it. And a lot of people think that religion is required to give us morals, but, you know, people, you know, religion only provides the morality that human beings give it. I mean, there's no inherent morality in religion itself. It's given morality by human beings. And so that kind of touches again based on the cultural relativism. That's a mouthful. And so one thing may be right, for example, within the Christian religion, and it may be wrong within Islam or vice versa, things like that. And so the bottom line is do no harm, do right. Now, with that having been said, you know, there's so much to what people consider right and wrong that's really a belief. It's just a position. It's an opinion. It's a belief. And, I mean, this is obviously a deep topic. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But that's the thing that – the one thing that I wanted to really establish and get people thinking about is, you know, what do you consider right and wrong? Now, some of that has its basis in just human morality. I mean, there is a human morality. You know, you don't kill. You don't steal. Those kinds of things. You know, we don't do those things. I mean, most people, you know, if they do those things, then they obviously are odd or there's something wrong there. But most people, generally speaking, you know, we know you don't kill, you don't harm, you don't hurt. And that's just something that's inborn. It's innate. We know that. And so the rest of it, different opinions and beliefs, that really is part of culture. It's part of what we were raised with and so on. Comments? Anyone?
Well, I would say that I think a lot about... I'm sorry, I had something on the top of my mind, but I was...
we're multitasking.
Yeah.
But one thing I recall, yes, the thing I was thinking about is if we truly look across the board about what people generally consider right and wrong, I mean, a lot of it can be vague, you know, a lot of it can be etiquette, a lot of it can be really what can be honestly said is preference, right, to a lot of things. And that's why there's a comment that, or a phrase that you had that I always carried with me that when it comes to preference yield, when it comes to principle, law, or policy, stand firm. And it's important right. to distinguish between the two. But when we get to the core of what a lot of people consider right and ethical and good, there's a lot of commonality between all cultures, the human universals that are common traits between all human societies. So we can get to this later on too, the entire nature versus nurture, or as is discussed in the course, nature via nurture, which is something we can discuss further on too. But I think that we are born with a core set of guiding principles. They kind of, well, they're not fleshed out in those terms yet. They're innate. And I think it's a very interesting question to ask where that derives from. And...
Okay. Any comments, Dr. Hunter?
Well, I think from the beginning, so where does that come from? What comes to my mind is that philosophers from the beginning of time have been looking at those existential questions about, you know, what's the reason for my existence? How is it that I think? Descartes says, I think, therefore I am. But, you know, really that's relative to whether or not you think. So, you know, posing questions about our ability to have rational thought and to make choices. And I think that's where it really begins, because is it right or wrong to kill? It depends if you're hungry. You know, somebody might think it's wrong to kill an animal, but if you need to eat, and now we know that plants have consciousness, so yikes, you know, that's a real existential question. So what's right or wrong? And I think that Fram makes a really good point about, you know, wrong is doing without considering the harm that may occur. And to me, that's a pretty critical thought, and it's been entertained again by philosophers from, God, we can go back to Socrates, Nostradamus, you know, fast forward. There were, I think, geniuses of the modern world. The BBC documentary, it's on Netflix, is brilliant because there were these minds asking questions in the late 1800s about who are we, but putting religion aside. What are our ethics? What's our psychology? And that's what got Freud started. So people have been asking these questions for a long time, but when we don't consider the harm, that's where I'm going with this, I think that we're doing, like there is this natural law of consequence, cause and effect. When I do this, what will happen? And I think people... more so years ago, these farmers would know this, people who lived with the land would know this, or you live with the animals, you kill too many buffalo, they go extinct, duh. But there was, in indigenous communities, there is a natural understanding. You're raised with it, you understand it, and you try not to cause harm. You try to perpetuate the cycle of life, the circle of life, and the provisions of life. So, I mean, but again, that it's an existential question when people are not living in a natural order. We're living in an intellectual order that brings up a whole lot of questions that really shouldn't, it should go without saying, but it has to be said, because a lot of people are lost in that because they kill all the buffalo. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That brings up another area of right and wrong, you know. And what I was trying to say earlier, that a lot and perhaps most of what we think is right and wrong is really, it boils down to an opinion or a belief or something we were raised with. For example, you know, hunting, you know, and fishing. I mean, I was, my relatives, they were fishermen anyway, and I kind of grew up, you know, with fishing and did a lot of fishing as a kid. But as I became an adult, I could no longer do that. And I went through a phase of catch and release, and then I just quit altogether because I can't kill. I think it's wrong to kill, and yet there are other philosophical issues at work, because we've got to eat, right? And somebody's got to kill. And I don't want to go into that because there's, you know, it comes back to this planet where everything eats everything else, and there's no answer to that why it's the way it is. But the point is that for me, to go out and hunt and fish and all that, that's, to me, that's wrong. And I don't judge people per se by that. I mean, I don't look down upon them. I just don't do it. And I don't, you know, I just don't like it. Of course, Dr. Hunter will come back and, you know, with a report
on that
one. No,
I would just say it's wrong for you.
It's wrong.
So
it's right.
I think if we can articulate this better, you just think it's wrong for you. But you, because you still eat meat.
Yes, it's wrong for me to kill, and
yeah.
I don't like killing, so I don't hunt and I don't fish. Now, I understand that there are people who are poor and who have to do that. I get that, and for them, that's a necessity. You know, so that's the point. The point I'm trying to make, for me, it's wrong, and that only underscores what I'm trying to say, is that a lot of what we think is right and wrong is right or wrong for us, but it's not necessarily right or wrong.
But it's cultural, because if you had to, what you know is that if suddenly you got a big hurricane and there's nothing there, but a deer walks through and you haven't had meat for 6 months, you would kill the deer.
I don't know.
Well, but you're capable. Because you know what's in you. We're all capable of that.
Well, certainly capable of killing, you know, in terms of I could. I mean, I have the power to do it. I have guns. I have stuff I could kill, but I don't want to. And I don't know. I honestly don't know, Vicki, whether I would, because I get into this existential hole.
The older I get, the more I have it, too. But,
you know,
I raised animals.
I'll die and let the thing live. You know.
I know, but you see, I lived on a farm, raised my own animals, and I named my chickens. And you know, as a matter of fact, 1 year I didn't really want to tell the kids what it was, and we had ribs one night, and they thought it was pork ribs, and then I said, no, that's Odin the sheep,
and that was
their sheep. But what we would do, and this is the way we honor life, and I know people who are not poor who go hunting because it's preferable. To eat what you, like, there's a ritual to it, an appreciation and the gratitude of that. And, you know, I don't like to kill it. If I have to, I do, but.
You were a single mom raising three kids.
No, but it doesn't matter. I would get somebody come over and chop the heads off and I would clean them. And because I have no problem cleaning.
You did what you had to do to feed your family.
It's still a preference. It was a preference of a way of life. I could have gone to live in the city and gone to the mall, and I, you know, sometimes I would. But this is when I don't think it's a matter of right or wrong. I think it's right or wrong for the individual, and it's a preference of life, which is a cultural belief. You came to acquire a certain belief system, and your belief system now says only poor people hunt, and that's not necessarily true.
No, I didn't say that. I said that I understand that people may need to hunt. That's what I said. Not only poor people. I know only poor people don't hunt. There's a lot of rich people that go out hunting, especially on safari. I happen to know some of them. So.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting point is a lot of times the good and evil relevant to the context. Big game hunting in Africa is now looked upon largely disfavorably because of the extinction threat to a lot of these species. And let's also look at something that we can kind of agree on, is that what I'm hearing is still that we agree on the core concept of that killing without purpose is essentially wrong. That kill a thing for no reason is almost universally regarded as wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to kill with purpose is almost universally recognized as necessary, if not always pleasant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, good points, Michael. You put it really well.
Yeah. You get some kudos now.
But off another topic, it's the right or wrong, right down to, I think, number one, how we're raised. Number two is our own life experience and how we, you know, assimilate experiences and come up with our own ideas, beliefs, philosophies. And I know a lot of people who one day, you know, it just a light bulb goes on, they say, I'm a vegetarian. I don't have the heart to tell them that there's videos about plant consciousness now, you know, because it's as this, we believe what's right or wrong. This is where, in my reality, watching suffering without lending a hand is wrong. Plain and simple. In fact, I wrote this in one of my papers 7 years ago when I first started with IMHS, and I told you this story, Dr. Kelly, but came out of a hotel one night and I saw, and it was minus 25 degrees, it's really cold, and I see this man half laying under a vehicle, obviously drunk, passed out, but it's minus 25. Man, this is crazy. Pick him up, I was with a friend, take him into the lobby, and right away the people are screaming, don't let him sit here. I said, hey, like, well, I'm going to call the police. You should do that. That's good. And I realized that if I just left him there and went about my business, he's going to be in trouble. The right thing to do was stay until help came. And I knew he'd be being taken care of. But then I also knew that this is an indigenous man who may not get the follow-through care, because I'm suddenly realizing, I think not just because he's drunk, but because predominantly white people don't like Indians. Here we go. So I wait for the police, and right away, you know, the big posturing. And I, after this long conversation with this fellow, bless his heart, we had a great talk. And I looked at him. I said, my friend here has a broken heart. And this cop looked at me and said, what? I said, he's drunk. He has a broken heart. And he just needs to sleep it off. And the whole thing softened. All these people softened. Because I had to think really fast about how do I manage what could potentially be a deadly, and I kid you not, deadly situation for this man. So I had to soften the people. And when I knew they were softened, I knew then that I had done my part. And so, of course, the guy says, do you know him? I said, well, I do now. We've been talking. I found him. I passed out outside. Poor guy. You know, he's going to get himself in trouble with that broken heart. You know? Of course.
See, that's great. That's a perfect example of do no harm, but do right. See, if you had just left him there, you would be doing no harm, really, but you wouldn't be doing the right thing. But you did the right thing.
You take the right thing a little step further using your intuition. And this is where, you know, we have all these wonderful components to our, you know, to our makeup. And just access that and go the step further. That's all. Take it that step further. Now, I don't know, because it's very common, and I think it's all over North America, but we have a common problem in Canada, and I have seen it for myself time and again, where police acquire drunken people and drop them off out of town. Out of sight, out of mind. And yes, and I have known a lot of suffering because of that. And it's a stash and grab and stash kind of thing is what they call it. And my son-in-law complains about it in the hospital here, that they don't call police anymore because, you know, they want the police to take this patient, you know, into some kind of care, but there is no facility. You can't take him to the drunk tank. So they just drive him a block, drop him off, or take him down the road, drop him off, and they're left to their own devices. So I still can't know whether, bless his heart, good old Darcy, I remember his name clearly, would have gotten that extra care. But short of actually going on the car ride, I can't know that. Or taking him home, which I'm not going to do because that's stupid. And it's just how far do you go? I wish that there was some other follow-up I could have done, but then there isn't really. Do you know what I mean? Because it's pushing it too far.
And that's what we need in this planet, is we need to take care of our own. Now, talking about what's right and what's wrong, you know, and morality and all that, and I think that most people, most common people would say, yes, we need to take care of our own. We need to feed the hungry and shelter the homeless and that sort of thing. And yet the common person is not in a position to make that happen. And, you know, their people are busy with their lives, and yes, they want it, and they mean well, and they want well, but, you know, it just doesn't ever come together. And so then we look at a world with the governments and, you know, so many countries, divided world, and different beliefs and different things, but one thing that is fairly universal, and I'm not going to say completely universal, but fairly universal, is that as a species, I mean, if you're an alien and you're in your spaceship outside in orbit and you're looking down at the Earth and you're taking a, you're assessing the human species, we kill each other and we don't take care of each other. We allow each other to go hungry. We allow each other to go homeless. And I'm talking about as a global thing, a community thing, a global thing. And that is morally wrong. That is a moral wrong to not take care of our own. Now, I don't mean that we need to treat a whole bunch of dependent people, but we need to be educating people. We need to be seeing to their needs. Every one of us should be. It's like, you know, universal health care and things like that that some countries don't have. One that I live in, as a matter of fact. And, you know, we need to be taking care of our own, and we're not. We're spending trillions on ways to kill one another. And, you know, no wonder the aliens don't want to make first contact. I mean, they're here studying this thinking, boy, these people are really screwed up. You know, we hope that they evolve out of this thing. And frankly, I do too. And I know we will. And I have that optimism because one of the things that I've learned in the last 8 years of having this church and having this school is that the good people have come out of the woodwork. You know, our students and our members, the people who want peace, who want good, who want to help other people, they have come out of the woodwork. And frankly, it restored my faith in humanity because, you know, before that, I just wasn't exposed to so many people who wanted to help others. And that's been a beautiful, beautiful result of this church and of this school. And of course, I'll be honest, you know, and I always am. In the beginning, I envisioned, you know, 8 years into this thing that we would be big enough to be really making some headway. And, you know, unfortunately that hasn't been the case. You know, I was hoping that the church would grow. Unfortunately, as Michael's told me, and I know this to be true, maybe I'm ahead of my time, but, you know, the church is not a Christian church. We don't have anybody we worship. I can't tell you, do this because if you don't, God's not going to be pleased. I don't have anything like that. That's nothing in our dogma, in our belief system that requires people to do something to please somebody else, because we teach healthy life concepts, life principles. And so I would love, dearly love, for this church to do well enough to where we could start sponsoring shelters and educational centers where you get people, you know, you pull them in when they're living on the street, you pull them in, you educate them, you help them to get marketable skills, and you help to employ them and, you know, help them to find jobs, that is. And I would love to do that. I would dearly love it. And if I was, you know, independently wealthy, that's where my money would be going, is to do that and start these centers around the planet. I mean, I would be looking into ways to, you know, devices to you know, turn seawater into, you know, drinkable water, potable water, and get those into these countries that need them, and because everybody should have water and food. Anyway, I'm on a rant. I'm going to get off my rant, and well, I'll open up to your stuff.
Fran says, aliens have already placed detour signs around the Earth.
You know, that's right.
Yeah, I think it's there's been some really good discussions going on in the chat that I've been reading, and it's there's so many of us that we get it, and we find solutions, and hopefully we can address our own judgments as we go because we all have them. And I know Dr. Tabitha was saying that people don't take care of their own because of a scarcity mentality. Dr. Angie says it's judgment, not scarcity. And just so I can throw this in there, when we live with an attitude of privilege, and privilege of any kind, when we believe we're an exception to anything, then we get that judgment. Like, we work really hard and we deserve this money. That's a privileged attitude that doesn't take into consideration matters like opportunity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to watch our privileged attitudes, because we're never forget where you come from. Everybody came from nothing, unless you were born with nannies. But even then, the old story of Buddha, born into privilege, and he wanted to understand what it was to all those other people. And that's where he began his enlightenment, which takes me to another comment that Dr. Angie says, my experience is that the poorest people are the first ones who offer help because they know how it feels and have empathy. And, you know, and she says, and medical care. But I think that what it is you're closest to your compassion. When you're suffering, you're closest to your compassion. Well, all too often, when people are separate from the suffering, they don't want to remember it and they become privileged. And I'm just saying, I've seen that, you know, in my 63 years, that people don't like to remember their pain rather than embrace it and have compassion for those who are suffering. There's this attitude that we have in our westernized society that if you work hard, you're going to do really well and get all that stuff. And if those people don't have it, it's because they didn't work hard enough. And that's just not true. And that's where we limit our thinking. So a privileged attitude, to me, is the center of judgment. And as long as we can keep a handle on that, we'll always keep our feet in the ground and keep in touch with our spirit first. Spirit first. This is a borrowed body, temporary place. Nobody's going anywhere with all that money. So spirit first.
Well put. All right. So before we wrap up this topic, I'll just put it out there. If you'd like an inner oracle card pulled for you, just put your name in the chat room. All right, so let's wrap up this topic. Michael, concluding thoughts.
Well, I think that, I'll wrap it up by relaying a personal anecdote. For a long time, after I undertook my journey from leaving a Christian dogma and going out and trying to establish what is right and what is wrong, I kind of came around to a concept of empathy, of taking the viewpoint of something, you know, like, and I really came around to the idea that our awareness gives us rights, consciousness gives us rights, that there are universal rights to beings, a modicum of integrity, and that was something that I think is going to be a little bit too deep to get into at the tail end of this, but something I'd like to talk about in the future. But I will say that I think we can agree on a lot of core rights and wrongs, and I think a lot of the other is debatable, honestly, because of our perspective. But
good point. So just, you know, for on the topic of morality, of what is the nature of right and wrong, you know, there are certain things that are moral issues, and they're inborn. We have conscience. We know what these things are. We don't kill. We don't hurt. We don't steal. Those kinds of things. Most people know those things. And there's always exceptions to the rule. But remember, too, that a vast majority of what we think is right or wrong has to do with culture and has to do with belief systems, our own opinions and things like that. So just be aware of that. You know, when you think that somebody's done something, quote, wrong, it really may not be a moral wrong. It may be just wrong for you. And because we respect free will, we have to let people do their thing, provided they're not harming us or, you know, and if they might be harming others, but it's up to those people to stand up for themselves too. So it's been a good discussion. We have a number of people who would like cards. So Dr. Hunter, I'm going to turn it over to you to start that. But you have to.
Sorry, no, I was just. I would take off my mute and stop coughing here. Just got a little bug in my throat. Dr. Tabitha, I pulled your card first, number 7, self mastery. To know who you are and why you are who you are is self actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery toward the path of self-completeness. That's a good little tap on the shoulder there. Mm-hmm. Self-mastery. So I think Star is next. Michael, do you want to grab one for Star?
I'd be happy to. And fantastic. I pulled number 32, sympathy, empathy.
That's one of my favorites. They're all my favorites.
Well, you help write them.
Mercy is compassion.
You know, can I get you to stop for a sec? Let's just stop for a sec, Michael. I kid you not. I have to say this because I was thinking, Fran, and I pulled a card while you're reading for Star, and I pulled sympathy, empathy. Wow. Now, I wish we were all on, like, Skype video for you to see it, because I truly did just pull their card. So this is a double one for Star and Fran. Fran, I'm going to pull another one for you right after, but listen up, everybody. Okay, Michael, go ahead.
Mercy is compassion in action and fulfills a kind act of paying it forward. Sympathy, sensitivity for another's plight, and empathy, relating to another's plight, each requires a need, compassion, and action to fulfill a soul's need to explore, investigate, and educate. Always extend the benefit of the doubt until there is no longer a reason to do so.
You know, and this sympathy, empathy has really been an undercurrent in our whole discussion tonight. You know,
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Good. Good points. All right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can pull another one for Fran.
Yes, I am. Fran, this one is for you. I'm going in. I wasn't going to do it till I was actually starting. Spirit, Cosmos, Divine Energy. We haven't pulled that one for a long time. That's number 12. Drawing this card indicates the evolving relationship you have with your own inner spirit or higher self within the context of the greater universe. You are growing your relationship with the cosmic consciousness. Continue to observe and appreciate the interconnectedness of all life forms within the fabric of life and the important role you and they play.
And I don't even know the last time we pulled that one. That one.
Yeah.
It's interesting how some of them are rarer.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, we have Jeff there. Michael, if you want to.
And Jeff, I pulled number 34. Take, release, ownership. Ownership and entitlement are not the same. Ownership is taking responsibility with a healthy attitude. Entitlement is expecting more than what is earned. Further, codependence is taking an unhealthy ownership for other people's problems and feelings. This may be a time to reflect on owning only what is yours and, excuse me, time to reflect on owning only what is yours and releasing the rest.
All right. That's actually a very valid card for most of us. You know, there's some things we need to own, some things we don't own. So if we need to own it, we take ownership. If we don't need to own it, we release ownership. And that plays a big part in controlling others. You know, we try to control or change other people. Well, that's not our responsibility. So we release ownership of that need to control. So those are good points. All right, I think that's it for the cards as far as I can tell. So
it really is a good discussion. You know, it's a good way to toss around some ideas, check in with ourselves. You know, we got some great conversation in the chat room, some good points. Hope people were reading along there, because it's way more than we could say on air. But it's what is right and wrong, and maybe asking yourself what's right and wrong. What do you think is wrong, but just wrong for you, that might be okay for somebody else? Because we're back to preference and principle, and then asking yourself, what are your principles? You know, it's just checking in with all those little questions, existential questions.
Very good. All right. So we talked about a lot of good points tonight, and we hope that you found some value in it. Again, we appreciate everybody taking their time to join us live tonight, as well as those from the archive. We appreciate that. And if you have a topic that you'd like to hear discussed on this program, be sure to email us, admin@icmhchurch.org, or if you're a student in one of our schools, you can just email us, and using whatever email address you have for us. They all come here anyway. So, again, appreciate all the participation. We really appreciate you. Thanks to Dr. Hunter, as always, and to Michael. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.